The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions expressed are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but should Christians and other conservatives always be on the side of Israel just because the Bible calls that country the Promised Land? Or just because the Bible says there's going to be fulfilled prophecy about Israel? Well, not everybody believes in the Bible, and that's fine. I respect that. Whether or not you choose to study the Bible is totally up to you. But I will say this, and please hear me carefully. If you studied the true history of the Middle East, anything from any good, real, honest-to-goodness history book, not historical revision of recent, but a real history book with a credible historian, if you studied the history with or without a belief in the Bible, you would find going on today horrible historical revision. Little, if anything, about the Israeli-Palestinian situation has been taught in today's university or today's media with even a kernel of truth. Today we have an Israeli citizen on the phone calling us all the way from Israel, and not just any citizen, my brother Paul Siegel, no stranger to our program because we have had him on a couple of times before over the years. He will be joining us in just a few minutes because, as you know, Israel and her relationship with the Obama administration has been very much in the news lately. First, some other news. As conservatives lick their wounds from that healthcare bill disaster by regrouping and strategizing on how to take back the House and the Senate this November, they find themselves frustrated with liberal Democrats and other progressives because those camps tend to resist true debate and instead stoop to catchy one-liners or mantras, as they are sometimes called. My body, my choice. That's a common one when people are arguing against the pro-life position. And when homosexuality comes up, the mantra is, we need to show compassion. That's it. No complexities, no subtleties to the issue. Just, it's about compassion, period. You don't believe in homosexuality, you don't believe in compassion. And then, of course, this week, healthcare legislation dominates the media. The mantra de jour for Democrats, the mantra de jour, is Republicans are the party of no. Okay, well, fair enough. Much as conservatives prefer to have discussions with detailed arguments and an honest tracking of real, honest-to-goodness backed-up facts, we may just need to come up with a soundbite or two of our own. So I have one. Your old pal Bob has one for you. Inasmuch as the government just passed a law that all citizens must purchase health care insurance, whether they want it or not, here is our slogan. Whatever happened to my body, my choice? Well, nothing seems less like a choice than socialism. Reverend Al Sharpton made the news this week by responding to a question from Fox News' Geraldo Rivera, who asked if the government asserting its authority over the healthcare industry takes us a step closer toward socialism. Sharpton replied by saying, "The American public overwhelmingly voted for socialism when they elected President Obama." This statement has created a good deal of chatter over the news media and internet. Actually, Newsweek beat Sharpton to the punch by spilling the beans over a year ago when the cover of its February 7, 2009 issue read, "We are all socialists now." And yet when conservatives express concern that our new gargantuan healthcare legislation continues us down the path of socialism, they are quickly chided by Obama supporters. Supposedly, using the word socialist is name-calling. Supposedly, using the word socialist is an example of extreme rhetoric. Even conservative radio talk show host Michael Medved challenges his fellow conservatives not to use this word because it will make us look bad. Look, I'm a big fan of Michael Medved. I appreciate where Medved is coming from. I honestly do, but only to a point. Certainly there is wisdom in debating with ideas rather than fanning a flame. On the other hand, since history tends to repeat itself, if indeed President Obama and the current Democratic Congress are walking us down a socialist plank, knowing so ahead of time might be helpful. For then we can evaluate other countries that already tried this product and see how it all worked out for everyone. To say that conservatives are mean and nasty by using a word that neither Sharpton nor Newsweek shied away from would be such obvious hypocrisy, I won't even bother to respond. Instead, I'll simply challenge people to come up with a different title if they don't like socialism. Whatever you call it, the private sector is being slowly strangled by those who believe the government knows better than its own citizens how to spend or invest their own money. In little more than a year, our government has taken over major banks. Our government has taken over major auto companies. Permission to own the entire student loan program was also hidden in the health care bill like a prize at the bottom of a box of Cracker Jack. Meanwhile, Democrats push tirelessly for cap and trade, a law that will impose new fines and taxes on a whole assortment of industry in the name of combating global warming. It's no surprise that Obama himself does not call these amorphous changes socialist. Instead, he insists he's cleaning up George Bush's mess and helping to bring about a greener planet and offering health care to all. By defending the takeover an inch at a time, Obama makes it more difficult for people to take a wide-angle view and see what's really going on. Such tactics always work with some. Others recall the old saying, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. But when Obama quacks out his foreign ideology, it leaves much to be desired. When North Korea and Iran defy U.S. protests and UN sanctions, the response of the Obama administration is a call for calmness, a call for patience, and more negotiation, more talks. But when Israel has the audacity to build some apartment buildings in its own capital city, we see our president express more anger and more indignation than he has ever voiced toward another nation. In fact, he's expressed no anger and no indignation from any other nation. While meeting this week with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Obama saw to it that no joint public statement was made and no cameras were allowed. It was almost as if he was ashamed to even be having the meeting. But boy, a year ago, he sure didn't mind giving a large-scale photo op speech in Egypt calling for peace between Israel and the Palestinians. Is this the way we treat our allies? Now, I know, some would say Egypt is an ally too. But then Egypt frequently has anti-American headlines on its newspapers. Israel does not. You are listening to The Bob Siegel Show. We will be right back with my brother Paul Siegel, a citizen of Israel. Your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated, about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170, 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back. Welcome to Intelligent Talk on 1170 KCBQ. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, here to give you a firsthand observation of just exactly what is going on in Israel. My brother, Paul, who actually lives in Jerusalem. Paul, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Bob.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you again. So, boy, there's all kinds of stuff going on in the news. But before we even go there, the last time or the last couple times you were on our program, you had been to Israel a lot. Since then, you've actually moved your entire family out there, and you moved our mother out there. Why don't you tell the audience why somebody who was living in, quote unquote, the safety and plushness of America would decide to pack up and move to Israel?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we see that people from all over the world migrate to the United States. So it's not very often that we see people actually, American citizens actually leave the United States to go live in another country. But, you know, there's been a connection between the Jewish people and the land of Israel that is boundless and timeless. And even when the Jewish people were in exile, they never forgot the land of Israel and Jerusalem. And both Israel and Jerusalem are prominent in the daily prayers, the holidays, and the rituals of Jews. There are so many commandments from God that can only be performed in Israel that the Jewish religion and the act of living in the land of Israel are deeply intertwined. You know, I came to Israel when I was 17 years old, and I fell in love with the land instantly. It was always my dream to live in Israel, and this was made easier during the last few years when my two daughters and most of my friends from Denver, Colorado, had moved to Israel. So, you know, the Hebrew word for moving to Israel is actually called Aliyah, which means to go up, spiritually, that is. And this term Aliyah comes from when Jewish pilgrims used to go up to Jerusalem to visit the temple during the three major festivals of Passover and Feast of Weeks and Tabernacles. And I don't know, It's kind of a mystical feeling, but not all Jews live in Israel, obviously. About half of the Jewish world now lives in Israel, and about half outside, largely in the United States and France. But I don't know. I've always been in love with Israel, and it was always my dream to move here, and now I've had the opportunity to do it, and I did it.
Well, you know, it was a little over a year ago that I went to Israel for the first time, as you know, since you hosted me there. And I did feel that connection to the land that people had talked about. It affected me in very unusual, very positive ways. But I'll tell you, when you mention most Jews are either in America or France, I think of the anti-Semitism that's on its rise all over the world and in France and Germany. There's the burning down of synagogues again, this time by the Muslims, but the governments there are not doing a lot about it. We may see a whole lot more Jews go into Israel soon, whether they like it or not. There may not be any other place for them to go.
Well, you know, it's tough because, you know, if you look at it rationally, Israel doesn't look like it's the safest place to go. But, you know, we here actually feel it's safer to be here than abroad. So while Jews in America are very worried always about their relatives and their friends in Israel, often we here are worried about our friends and relatives in the United States, especially when you see what's going on college campuses. There's the intellectual elite is, you know, it started with anti-Zionism, but lately, as you saw at UC Irvine and other demonstrations from last year's war in Gaza, there's been, you know, overt anti-Semitism.
Oh, well, there was a rally in Florida. Not
calling for the destruction of Jews.
Yeah, there was a rally in Florida not long ago, a Muslim rally, where they were shouting, "Go back to the ovens, Jews." And it was actually called a peace rally. And people don't even do beans about that. But then Israel puts up an apartment complex, or plans to put up an apartment complex in its own capital city, and people are just going ballistic. Let's review what happened. So Joe Biden was in town. How that goofball ever became our vice president is beyond me. But he was in town, and it coincided with an announcement to build some complexes in Jerusalem. From the point of view of the Israelis, why don't you just go through and review what's been going on in the news?
Well, first of all, we should go back and talk about the fact that, you know, Jews have always lived in Jerusalem. We've almost always been a majority in the city of Jerusalem. And since Israel liberated the eastern half of the city that was illegally occupied by Jordan in 1967, they unified the city and annexed it and declared it the capital of the state, and that it would always be unified. Now, it's actually a U.S. law that was passed in 1995. So it's actually a U.S. law that states that Jerusalem should remain an undivided city, and that should be recognized as the capital city of Israel. So a year ago, Obama made a major shift in U.S. policy by referring to Jerusalem as occupied Palestinian land, which was kind of a shock. And he asked Israel to cease settling additional sectors of the city. Now, that was rejected by Benjamin Netanyahu, but as a gesture to Obama, he agreed to have a partial temporary settlement in other parts of Israel where he did a freeze, but specifically not Jerusalem. So this should not have come as a surprise. Biden and the Obama administration claimed they were whipsawed by Netanyahu when Jerusalem made this announcement. Now, we're building every day in Jerusalem, and there's bureaucratic decisions being made on zoning and plans being approved, and this was just a routine approval of not a new neighborhood, but an existing neighborhood where they're just building some more apartment units. And so what we think happened is that the Obama administration was looking for a pretext to blame Israel for the breakdown in the peace process, and they used this and jumped on this. And everyone in Israel was just shocked, because this is a routine matter. If we had to stop building apartments every time an American official came to Israel, there'd be no building in Jerusalem, because there's somebody here every week.
Well, you know, I visited Israel. I actually flew in the day after the election, and I remember when you were taking me on tour, everywhere we went, Israelis, when they saw that we were Americans, were giving us the high five and going, yeah, Obama, they just love them. And I remember getting into talks with several of them and saying, are you out of your mind? Do you have any idea what this guy's going to do to your country? Because he was talking very much in favor of the Palestinians even before he became elected. And even if not, that's part of the whole liberal Marxist agenda. They have a tendency to always take the side of evil, period.
Well, I think, you know, Israelis, like most people around the world, saw, you know, Obama as a young, fresh leader, and it was exciting. But very quickly after he became the president, particularly after his Cairo speech, his approval rating in Israel is one of the lowest on earth. It's around 6%.
Well, it's getting pretty low here in America, too.
6% of Israelis. That includes our left wing, which is pretty extreme, like the American left wing. That means that there are not that many left-wingers in Israel as we thought, because only 6% of Israelis think Obama is pro-Israel. And they just did another poll last week, and it's around 9%. And so, you know, statistically, it's about the same. This is horrible for any U.S. president, compared with George Bush, that had like something around an 80% favorable rating by Israelis. So Israelis really don't consider Obama a friend. We're waiting to kind of see what's happening with American Jews that pretty much voted for Obama in a reverse fashion than Israeli Jewish citizens would.
Now, so I know that Jerusalem has never been considered occupied territory by the Israelis. I know, though, that even though it hasn't been talked about a lot lately, The Palestinians and the surrounding Arab nations would not only consider the eastern half of Jerusalem occupied territory, but if you listen to them talk carefully enough, they believe that all of Jerusalem and the entire country of Israel is on occupied territory. They don't really believe in Israel's right to exist at all.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's not just true for Israel. It's actually true for almost any place that Muslims have conquered, which includes Spain. If you listen to Al-Qaeda pronouncements, they still refer to Spain as Andalusia because it was once a Muslim-controlled area. And so, really, Israel's not that unique. It's just that Israel is a Western-style democracy in the heart of what would be considered the Middle East or the Arab world. And so we're at the forefront of this battle. But you're right. But what's unique here is that since the Oslo Accords, the so-called Palestinians have been negotiating with Israel directly for the last 15 years. I mean, during this whole last 15 years, we've been building in all parts of the land of Israel, so-called settlements. We've been building in Jerusalem. And these were never excluded from the Oslo Accords. There's not a paragraph in the Oslo Accords that says that Israel has to stop settlement activity. Now, this was happening all the way up till the election of President Obama. Since President Obama has referred to Israel settlements as illegal, which they're not, but he's the first president to actually use that word, and since he specifically called Jerusalem settlements, at that point, the Arabs stopped the negotiating process and made that their demand because they're not in a position to have the president of the United States be less hostile to Israel than they are. So if the president of the United States made a demand on Israel, that becomes their automatic position. So basically, Obama has thwarted his own peace process.
So if Obama hadn't opened up his big mouth, things would be better right now. He ended up creating more of a problem than solving it.
Right. So the question is why is he doing this? He made this mistake a year ago, and now he used these 1,600 apartments in a neighborhood which is about 5 minutes from the Israeli Knesset, which is like the Israeli Congress. These are neighborhoods that Jews have been living in for years, for like, 25 years, 30 years. These are not new neighborhoods. These are areas where there were no Arabs ever living. I mean, these are what's happened. What happened was after the 67 war, as the Jewish population increased and as the Arab population increased, the municipality of Jerusalem started building new areas. Just like in California, people will take a section of land that no one's living and start building on it. So this neighborhood called Ramat Shlomo that no one had ever heard about, and I doubt if Obama could even find it on a map, was just an empty hill that they built a Jewish neighborhood on.
Okay, Paul, stay with
That's
me over
it really
the
bridge. How? I mean, what I think Americans and other people need to ask themselves is, how is it that building homes in a city is a global concern?
Okay, let's put a hold on that question, Paul. Hold with me over the break. We'll also go to the phone lines when we return, 1-888-344-1170, if you have a question for our guest, Bob Siegel with Paul Siegel, calling from Israel. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480-539. W&S Electric. Welcome back to our program. I'm on the line with my brother, Paul Siegel. And if you'd like to weigh in on any of this, our call-in toll-free number is 1-888-344-1170. Welcome back to our program, Paul.
Well, thanks, Bob.
Let's go ahead to Stephen from North Park. Stephen, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call.
How are you, my friend? Nice to hear from you again.
I'm quite well, thank you. I've been just working up a storm. Fortunately, I'm one of the few people that has a job.
Oh, you're that person in America that still has a job. I was wondering who that person was.
Well, you know, I think I owe all the gratitude to the Lord God for that one.
And, most people think the Lord God is Obama these days. You better clarify which Lord God you're talking about.
My dear friend, what we have is we have used our democracy to buy ourselves a villain, all right? He is going to treat our elder brethren, the Jews, as horribly as a person named Barack Hussein Obama can be expected to treat them. We have gotten what we purchased. And now I think we need to move on to Plan B, how we can support our friends and our elder brethren in Israel without the help of the United States government. We're going to have to, I think this is although it's dreadful to see the American government take this loathsome turn, it just means that we have to forge new links with the Israelis in order that we, the people of the United States, should never lift up a wicked fist against against God's people.
Yeah, well, you know, Stephen, it's always nice to hear a supporter from Israel. I'm going to let my brother respond. Paul, how can Americans help Israel in their time of need right now?
Well, you know, Obama, what he's doing right now is he doesn't just see himself as the president of the United States, but he also sees himself as someone who's the leader of the world, and he sees himself as someone who's going to change not just America, but change the way America interacts with the rest of the world. And so just as he used the Democrats in Congress to kind of ram this health care bill down Americans' throats, he's going to be using the European Union, the United Nations, to try to ram a peace agreement down Israel's throat. But and in foreign policy, a president, you know, actually does have quite a bit of power. But that can be mitigated because the U.S. Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, to a large extent, are unified when it comes to Israel. That's one of the few things that most Democrats and Republicans in Congress might agree on these days. And the American people are very much, the latest polls show they're about 75% supporting Israel. So the president isn't really reflecting the attitudes and the desires of the American people. And you can make that known by calling your congressman, writing them. There's actually a Christian political action committee for Israel, like AIPAC. You've heard of kind of the Jewish lobby a lot, but there's actually a Christian one now. You can get involved in that. There's a lot you can do. And, of course, the best thing you can do is to come visit Israel. There's about 30% increase in tourism in Israel this year, and that's one great way to support Israel. You can buy Israeli products. But let your congressman and let the White House and let the Secretary of State know how you feel, because Obama can be mitigated to some extent if it's clear that in the November elections this could be something that could hurt him.
Unfortunately, we have a Congress that doesn't seem to be paying attention to its constituents lately. But, Stephen, let me give you a chance to respond to what Paul just said.
I agree with him totally. It can be mitigated. And I don't want to see this present situation as anything more of a drawback, but rather a chance for us to rather than through the offices of government, on our own, draw closer to Israel and to our brethren over there. I mean, what the government does badly, but what the American people do, the American people show a flair for success. And God willing, that even though our government has turned its back, the American people and the Israeli people will find a new way of connecting in spite of the villain in chief.
Oh, that's
you see what I'm saying. This is an opportunity to forge new bonds extra governmental bonds. And I would hope that somebody who's more articulate or a little bit sharper intellectually than myself would start coming up with new avenues of either commerce or some form of cooperation between us, and we can completely circumvent the socialists in government.
Well, Steve, you've sounded like a pretty sharp intellect whenever I've heard you over the air. So thank you for bringing some hope to the table, and please keep calling.
So look on the bright side, brother. Remember, you know, God of Israel reigns supreme, and if we hold together, even B.O. Obama can't
okay.
He can't stop us.
Okay. Thank you, my friend. Have a good day.
All right, bye-bye.
Say, Paul, now that I know how I stand on this, I want to hear from you. I'm of the belief that if Israel agreed to a separate Palestinian state tomorrow, if they gave back the West Bank, if they gave back the Golan Heights, as they've already given back Gaza, as they've already given back the Sinai, even if they gave up half of Jerusalem, isn't it true that Hezbollah and Hamas and even the Palestinian authorities themselves will continue to say that Israel should give back more? Isn't it true that absolutely nothing Israel does is going to make any difference at all? So my question to you then is, should we really even allow a Palestinian state to exist? Do they even deserve it? Have they proven themselves worthy of starting their own state?
Well, that's quite a lot there, Bob. But, you know, you could look at very recent history to get a clear answer to that. Israel, under Ariel Sharon, completely withdrew from Gaza. There's not one Jew living in Gaza. They withdrew the entire Israel Defense Force from Gaza and presented the Palestinians with an actual chance to say, okay, build your state. Let's see you do it. And not only that, but Bill Gates and some very wealthy Jews bought these greenhouses that the Jews had been using in Gaza to employ Arabs, and they actually gave them to the Arabs that were living in Gaza. They destroyed them almost immediately. It turned them into rocket launching pads and fired 8,000 rockets at Israel over a three-year period until Israel went in and invaded Gaza last year. So,
and then when Israel went in and invaded...
what happened when Israel actually did give land for peace.
Yeah, and then when Israel invaded Gaza, the United Nations went ballistic. They also burned down Jewish synagogues as soon as they got in there. But boy, if somebody accidentally touches the Quran, people go into cardiac arrest.
Well, that's right. And one of the things that happened with the war in Gaza last year and this Goldstone report that some of your listeners might have heard about is the new strategy. You know, there's been strategies that the Arab world has devised to try to destroy Israel. The first one was they tried to just annihilate us through war because they outnumbered us and they thought they could do it. Well, they didn't. And then there was a period of terrorism for the last 30 years. That was the main strategy. And that came to a head where, you know, Jews and Israelis in restaurants and on buses were getting blown to bits, you know, over the last, you know, 9 years ago, 8 years ago. And we found a way to fight that. And we're successful. You don't read about suicide bombings in Israel anymore. You read about them in Iran and Pakistan.
Okay, Paul, hold.
Muslim countries, but not in Israel.
Hold with me over the break, Paul.
The new strategy seems to be working. This is called delegitimization. And what they're doing, what happened was, is the world went ballistic because Israeli soldiers invaded Gaza in order to stop these rockets being launched at... By the way, these rockets are being launched at the parts of Israel that are not considered occupied or in dispute.
Okay, Paul, we need to go to a break. So hold with me, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for a professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Next Sunday is Easter Sunday. I will not be doing a live show, but the show will still be on. We will rebroadcast the best of the Bob Siegel Show, highlighting some of our favorite phone calls over the years and some of our favorite political satires, such as Barack Wants to Be a Millionaire, and of course, your regular characters on our program like Disclaimer Dan and Smiley Miley. I will be back with you 2 weeks from now with a brand spanking live show. Let's return now to my brother, Paul Siegel, on the phone from Israel. Paul, welcome back to our show.
Thanks, Bob.
Now, we left off.
Let me finish answering your question.
Yes, about Gaza. Yeah.
State. The answer really is no. Even Israelis that imagine that we could divide Israel for a third time and create a new Arab state. They thought, they in their minds imagined we could survive that. There might be peace. Even if there wasn't peace, that we could still fight back and gain the land back. But what's happening now is, none of them ever imagined that any Israeli leader would divide Jerusalem. That was never, that was always, that's the third rail in Israeli politics, is that Jerusalem is not to be divided, and it's not for negotiation. And I think our enemies realize that, this is not just about land. We're a spiritual people. We're here because this is our homeland. They know that without Jerusalem, Israel can't survive. It's like a body without a heart. And our enemies instinctively understand this. And this is why, this is why this is such a huge issue, that when the President of the United States starts talking about dividing Jerusalem, we're talking about a cataclysmic event that would definitely result in a war. And, one of the things I was thinking about is, when you talk about Jerusalem, it's good to go back and read Zechariah, who was a Hebrew prophet that wrote almost exclusively about not just building the second temple, but the end of days when the Messiah would come and there'd be a third temple. And Zechariah says that all the nations of the world will go to war against Jerusalem. And since it's a prophet, we know it's going to happen. It was very difficult. I had never really felt that, well, if that's true, that means the United States is going to have to go to war against Jerusalem. So either the United States would be going to war against Jerusalem, or the United States might not exist as a country at the time that the Messiah comes. And so it was very difficult for me to ever imagine that scenario. But in the last year, given what's happened and the change that's happened with the United States, it's now conceivable. And that's very frightening. Of course, if you want to know what happens when the world goes to war against Jerusalem, you can read the rest of Zechariah, where it doesn't look so good for the nations that attack Jerusalem.
Well, it seems like every nation in the world has been turning against Israel. The United States is holding on by a thin thread, but Somebody could be in Brazil, they could be in India, they could be in Outer Mongolia, and they all seem to care about this tiny little piece of land no bigger than the state of New Jersey. It sure shows that God knew what he was talking about when he picked that piece of land. Somehow, the whole world is always interested in it, but anti-Semitism is just coming back like gangbusters right now.
Well, you know, when the Jews were not living in Israel, not that they never were, but when for the most part we weren't and it was controlled by other empires, no one really did care about it. In fact, Jerusalem was never a capital of any of the conquerors of Jerusalem. The last time it was the capital of the state of Judea in the first century. And it's been the capital of the Jewish people since King David made it the capital 3,000 years ago.
Now let's clear up a couple of myths. This idea that, boy, the real thing that needs to be done is a separate state. Isn't it true that the League of Nations promised to Israel everything that we would today call Israel and everything that we would today call the occupied territories and even everything that we would today call Jordan, and then 75% of it was sold behind the backs of the Jews after they started migrating over here. So we've actually had a separate Palestinian state called Jordan since early in the 20th century.
It's true. I mean, Jordan is a Palestinian state. I mean, there never was such a... Don't forget that a Palestinian was a Jew who lived in Palestine. The Arabs that lived in Palestine refused to refer themselves as Palestinians during the British Mandate period because they were just Arabs and they were part of the Arab nation. They took on the identity of Palestinians in around 1964 when the Palestinian Liberation Organization was created. And I know you pointed that out in some of your blogs and your history on Israel, but it's really important to realize that this is a fictitious people. There's no Palestinian nation. There's no Palestinian language. There's no Palestinian culture. There's no Palestinian religion. These are Arabs that are no different from the Arabs living in Syria and Lebanon and in Jordan and Egypt.
And so
Jordan is an Arab state that was created out of Palestine. So from that sense, it is a Palestinian state.
And people need to even know where the word Palestinian comes from, because that's a Latinized understanding of the word Philistine, who had been an old enemy of the Jews. When Emperor Hadrian tried to destroy the rest of Israel, he renamed the land Syria Palestinia. And the term Palestine had never been applied to this land before. Prior to that, it had been called Israel.
Right, Israel or Judea. Jews get the name Jew comes from Judeans as one of the tribes. And, of course, that's the tribe that King David was from, and that's the tribe and the lineage of David where the Messiah will come from. So, but, you know, Jerusalem is in Judea.
Exactly. But the politically correct spin now is there was this indigenous group of people called the Palestinians who lived there for thousands of years until the Jews came after World War II. It's such nonsense. So 75% of what the League of Nations promised the Jews was turned into Jordan. The Israelis went ahead and said, well, we'll accept the remaining 25%. Then in 1947, the United Nations partitioned even the remaining 25% to have a Jewish state and an Arab state. And the Jews agreed to that, and the Arabs did not agree to that.
Of course not, because the goal of a Palestinian state is not to create a 23rd Arab state. The aim of Palestinian state is only to destroy Israel, that there not be a Jewish state. The goal is that there not be a Jewish state. And then Hamas and Hezbollah are very clear about that. They don't even want there to be a Palestinian state. They want to be a caliphate, a Muslim caliphate.
Okay, Paul, stay with me.
Most of these Arab states are artificial creations from the British and from the end of World War One.
All right.
Britain and France, you know, kind of divided up the Middle East.
Stay with me over another break. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with my brother, Paul Siegel, talking about the Israeli-Palestinian situation complicated by the Obama administration. Thank you.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. bobsiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Welcome back to our program. We're coming down to our last segment with my brother Paul Siegel calling us from Jerusalem, the heart of a lot of controversy this week from the Obama administration. Paul, welcome back to the air.
Thanks, Bob.
Now, so we've talked about the fact that we keep hearing this spin, if only there was a separate Palestinian state. The word Palestinian was invented by Emperor Hadrian anyway and was used of the Jews migrating to America over the years. The name was kind of hijacked by Yasser Arafat in the 60s, who is not even from the land they call Palestine himself, Egyptian-born, used it as a publicity ploy. However, 75% of what the League of Nations promised Israel was turned into Jordan. 47, they partition it. Again, the remaining 25%, the Jews agree, the Arabs do not. The Arabs try to annihilate Israel. Israel wins the war, and then we have Arab refugees, most of which get settled in Jordan. The others, the nations wouldn't even settle. And that's interesting to me, Paul, because there were all kinds of Jewish refugees that were kicked out of the surrounding Arab states at that time. Israel picked them all in. It seems that the Arab nations were letting the poor, I'll call them Palestinians for want of a better term, they were letting the poor Palestinians be used as pawns.
Yeah, I mean, one of the good things that God blessed us with is that he made the Arabs our enemies because they've done some pretty dumb things. By kicking out all the Jews from places like Iraq, where Jews had lived, you know, since the Babylonian exile, from Egypt, from Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, all these Jews came to Israel, or a lot of them did. Some of them went to France. And that helped build the state of Israel. I mean, Israel took in all these Jews. They were thrown out of their homes in about a period of 1 week after having lived in the country for like 2,400 years, like in Baghdad. And it strengthened us. So a lot of the times, the wars that have been launched against us and the things that have been done is actually strengthened the Jewish people and made Israel a stronger, better place.
Yeah, now, of course, at the end of the 47 war, even though Israel won that war, the city of Jerusalem, which had been quartered by the United Nations, was now taken over completely by Jordan. Then during the Six-Day War, 1967, Moshe Dayan went in and liberated that city. Now, I heard an interesting story while I was visiting Israel, which I think you were even the one who told me this, about how the Grand Mufti or whatever his name was, the Muslim leader in Jerusalem, was expecting the Jews to either kill the Arabs or throw them all out because the Jews were never allowed during their temple wall during the time when it was under the dominion of the Jordanians. And much to the surprise of the Arabs who were there, Moshe Dayan went in there and gave him the keys and told them they could still go worship at the Mosque of Omar anytime they want. He could have probably torn that thing down. And at that time, world opinion was more on Israel's side and nobody would have blinked twice. But the Jews did something very congenial.
Just one correction. The city in the War of Independence, Ben-Gurion realized that Israel had to have Jerusalem. And many of the people died fighting for Jerusalem. But the old city where there was a Jewish quarter, which included the Temple Mount and the Western Wall, They weren't able to keep that, and the Jordanian army burned down all the synagogues in the old city and killed most of the Jews that they couldn't escape. And for this there was only this 14-year period where Jews weren't allowed to live in the Jewish quarter, and they weren't allowed to go to the Western Wall. They took Jewish gravestones from the Mount of Olives, where many Jews are buried, because that's where the Messiah is going to, come to Jerusalem from that entrance. And they used them to make latrines, and they made, stables for their animals and so forth out of them. So there was this 14-year period where Jews weren't living in the Jewish quarter or by the Western Wall, and they weren't allowed to go there. And now what Obama is saying, essentially, is that those are occupied Arab territories, because for 14 years out of the last, 3,000-4,000 years, Jews didn't live in this area. Now it's Arab.
So now, are you saying that even before?
Kind of crazy.
Are you saying that even before the 67 war, because 14 years from 1947, that would mean that even before the 67 war, how did the Jews get permission to go back into the Jewish quarter when it was under Jordanian rule?
Well, during the British Mandate period, Jews lived in the Jewish quarter and went and worshipped at the Western Wall. And during the Ottoman Empire, that was like a 1,200-year empire, Muslim empire, Jews were permitted to go to the Western Wall. So it was only that Jordan illegally annexed Jerusalem and the West Bank. Remember, it's called the West Bank because it was the West Bank of Jordan. It was annexed by Jordan. And only two countries in the world recognized that illegal occupation by Jordan. So is this only this 14-year period where Jews weren't living in the Mount of Olives and some of these so-called Arab neighborhoods?
Okay, so we're both agreeing it was during Jordan's occupation. I guess I'm thinking that from 47 to 67, that sounds like 20 years. I was getting confused by the 14 years.
Well, I'm sorry. It's 19 years. It's
19 Okay. So yeah, we are on the same page. Okay, so Moshe...
19 years.
And isn't it true...
Not a lot of time, given the scope of the amount of time we've been living in.
Right, but see, Paul, to me, the amazing fact that nobody seems to understand is when it was under Jordanian rule, the Jews were not allowed to worship at the Western Wall. When it came back under Israeli dominion, the Muslims were allowed to continue worshiping at their mosque, and they were very surprised that Israel even gave them permission to do so.
Well, legally, they had stored weapons in the mosque and under the Dome of the Rock, and according to the rules of warfare, Israel could have destroyed the mosque. But Moshe Dayan was a secular Jew. He didn't really, maybe he didn't really quite understand the significance of it. Or maybe he was trying to be magnanimous and showing the Arab world that, look, we're victors, and we're in our greatest victory. When you try to annihilate us, we're going to still let you pray here. Well, what's happened now is instead of us letting the Arabs pray here, the Arab religious leaders, the Muslim religious leaders in Israel, are claiming that there was never a temple and that we have absolutely no rights to Jerusalem or the Temple Mount or to the Western Wall. The Western Wall is Muslim. It's crazy. So they this is revisionism, but this is kind of the payback we get for trying to be nice.
Yeah, those outstretched hands.
Your Christian listeners should realize that during the 67 war, Israel didn't use any aircraft, and thousands of Jewish soldiers died. Where most of the casualties in the Six-Day War were in Jerusalem because they didn't want to bomb the city and ruin any churches or mosques or any other holy place. And so the city of Jerusalem was taken by hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, that outstretched hand of peace always works so well. So we've already had a separate state for the Arabs called Jordan. Then they partitioned it again in 47. The Jews agreed, the Arabs did not. Now we move on to the Clinton time of the Oslo Accords. Wasn't Yasser Arafat offered about 90% of what he had wanted, and he even turned that down because they didn't really want to make peace with the Jews? You got about 20 seconds
right
to respond.
Now, if you take the 25% of the land that was left to Israel and that was captured in the 67 war, 90% of the land where Arabs live is now under Palestinian Authority control. So they're already controlling that. They're controlling 100% of Gaza. Basically, they've already got 95% of Palestine.
Yeah. Okay, Paul, we've got
to
go.
We're now arguing about the last 5%. And, of course, the last 5% is coming, but we knew it would always get to this. So this is a religious war. This is not really about land. And so Obama's cutting to the chase. He's saying, you know what? We have to talk about Jerusalem. And in a way, he's doing the world a favor. Because okay. This really is about Jerusalem.
All right, Paul, thank you. We're out of time. It's good to have you on the phone, my brother. You take care and give my regards to the family. We'll see you next week, right. Everybody. We'll be right back.